welcome everyone to the Screamcast episode 63. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is Brad Henderson.
Yep.
BJ is not here. She's in the middle of this play stuff, right? She spent the last 22 hours in rehearsals or something.
Yeah, she's busy. So she's not pulling a Brian Sauer where she's out.
Oh, shit. I mean, you went there. But we do have with us Mr. J.R. Bookwalter. So
returning.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Nice. Mm-hmm. My sophomore appearance, I guess.
Hopefully there's no sophomore slump.
That's right.
I doubt.
I've already had one of those in my so-called career, so don't need another one.
Well, I doubt that will be the case. We wanted to bring you on because you at this recording, and the podcast will be released tomorrow, so we have about 10 days. And when
10
you're,
days,
if you're listening to this, 9 days left in the Indiegogo campaign for the Dead Next Door Blu-ray. So this is happening for the U.S. release, right? Because is 88 Films still doing their own thing?
Well, they are, question. But this is actually a region-free release, so it's basically anybody that wants it.
Okay.
You know, and I've got my hat with the feather in the cap and my pimp jacket. I'm in full-on pimp mode here to pimp this thing. So let's move some Blu-ray.
Exactly. I'm excited about it. And the first kind of chatter that I heard were, you know, people kind of, you know, there's always, I call them the Blu-ray.com people. And
oh, are you guys on there as well?
Yeah, every now and then. And you know, there's people complaining about aspect ratios and crap like that.
Oh my gosh,
and
it is crazy on that message board. It's, yeah. Some of the stuff, the minutiae that those guys get into, I'm like, maybe when I was 20, I would have cared about this stuff, but man, I just want to watch the freaking movie now.
Yeah,
so, it's been my age. It's like
one of the first criticisms, of course, of the first ones that lob stuff was because I've seen The Dead Next Door in a 4:3 ratio, and then it's going to be on Blu-ray in a 16:9.
Well, it's going to be on there as both.
Okay, all right. I wanted
because
to ask you
I knew that was going to be a grievance. I would never want to release it in just one aspect ratio because you're never going to make everybody happy that way.
Right.
Yeah.
So I figure if by releasing 4:3, which would actually be pillar boxed with black on the sides to maintain the aspect ratio.
Okay.
And then this new 16:9 cropped, that way the people that know the movie see it the way they remember. People who've never seen the movie have a whole new HD experience ahead of them.
Cool. Now, what did you like when you, so you did the 16:9, did you crop? Well, I want to kind of get into the technical aspects of this. How did you, because you're aware of framing, you know, the possible problems with cropping a film. What was the, your kind
well,
of...
Well, I was actually pleasantly surprised to discover that I had framed, you know, a Super 8 is a square frame. You know, it's like TV aspect ratio because it was meant for people to shoot their birthday video, you know, birthday movies and home movies on. So, and that's all the TVs were at the time. So they didn't ever plan for this sort of thing. And we certainly didn't shoot it anamorphic or anything like that because it didn't exist then. But I was pleasantly surprised when I started going through the footage because I didn't initially even consider it. And as I was going through the film scan, I was pleasantly surprised to find out there was a little bit of extra screen that had always been cropped off. You know, when you do a telecine, you kind of, because Super 8 only has sprockets on one side of the frame, it tends to move more than like 16 millimeter or 35 when you do a transfer. So it's not, you know, the registration is not so good and it moves around. So you kind of have to crop in more to allow for that.
Okay.
And the result was you'd lose some of the frame. Well, once we did this 2K film scan, you're seeing the entire frame. And there's a little bit of extra wiggle room there that, you know, you can crop it just within those, you know, margins, and you actually see more of the picture than you've ever been able to see before.
Okay.
So it'll be a little bit different experience, everything, you know, and that extra room also allowed for cropping it. Now, there's definitely going to be some shots that were never intended to, that were framed too tightly to begin with, mm-hmm. and are going to look a little bit weird in the 16:9. So I will not candy coat it. There will definitely be the occasional shot where people go, what the hell was that? But the majority of it, as you can see from the trailer that we just had cut, it looks pretty good, mm-hmm. I think. I mean,
yeah,
I
the trailer's outstanding, yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's one of the most exciting parts of it, is even more so than the cleaning it up and doing the film scan, is actually being able to see it in this sort of new cinematic way,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was never intended originally. But everybody likes when the picture fills the TV. You know what I mean? we've graduated from those days with my parents used to always go, "Why are these black bars on the TV? We don't understand." You know, back in the DVD days.
Well, I remember. I would get so frustrated in DVD when people would buy the standard edition. You know what I mean? I would always be like, "Why do they even have these DVDs?"
Oh yeah, crazy. Or even worse. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I worked at Blockbuster during that time, and every old person would come in and say, "I don't have the full picture. It's cutting out." You know, right. And it's like, okay, whatever. And they're like, "Well, give me the regular." And then they mean VHS when they say that. They're like, "Just give me the regular." And I was like, "Well, we don't have those anymore."
Well, that's the thing. I think, I mean, aside from movie fanatics, the people get confused when they see black bars. They don't they think they're seeing less image, not more. They just want it to fill the TV. So this way,
well, my parents do that, and they hit the zoom button.
Yeah, well, exactly. There's always that too.
Good old zoom button.
But the thing about going back to this 2K thing, I mean, the thing about 2K is actually more pixels than HD to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So when you crop it down, yes, you're losing off the top and bottom, but you're actually going, you know, you have more pixels there to begin with to be able to do that in the first place. I don't want to get too insanely technical because people will start tuning out. But you know, quality wise, there's more there to begin with. HD is actually a step down from the 2K scan. So,
okay.
If that makes any sense.
Were you worried when you first started this project, you know, going to HD? Was that a bit daunting to you? I don't know if I asked you this last time, but, you know, because I think everyone's seen this mainly on, it was released on video.
Anchor Bay. Yeah, well, Anchor Bay did a DVD.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah, for years we had the VHS, you know, thing. VHS covered a lot of sins. You know what I mean? People stuff could look like crap and nobody knew because it's VHS. You know, VHS looks like crap to begin with. So you weren't really losing anything because you were hiding things. You know, and then 10 years ago when we did the remastered version for Anchor Bay, you know, that was, again, a telecine, so it had a lot of the same problems. But it still, I mean, the DVD, it showed like a lot of the chemical stains and scratches, and things were more pronounced, but the overall picture, the color looked better. You know, some of the darker spots were brightened up, so there was you were seeing a little bit more. It was a big improvement over VHS, and now the leap to HD is almost like a tenfold. I mean, it's so much more than that Anchor, even that Anchor Bay disc, which I thought looked, you know, remarkably better than the old VHS version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think people are going to be very surprised. But to answer your question, when I decided to do this, I sent out one reel of the film to have scanned just to see what it would look like, because I wasn't sure. Because this is a popular thing now, all these, you know, when you're restoring a movie now, you want to go back and do a film scan because it's just so much superior to the old way of doing things. And when I saw that first reel, that's when I sort of realized, okay, there's something here, you know, it's going to take some color correction. It's going to take a lot of cleanup work, but this is going to be such a huge improvement that it's worth doing.
Mm-hmm. I don't, Brad, sorry if I'm stumbling over and just asking questions and not giving you a chance. Let
no,
me know.
It's okay.
Elbow
listening.
Me. We're going to be talking about, we didn't really say what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about scarecrows and then, at demons. And, I was reading up on the Demons 2 transfer, especially with what Synapse did when they acquired the films, and they had acquired the negatives. And I this gets too technical, you know, I don't know, I think people are interested in this, but when you do a remaster like this, do they scan in, is the negative, is it edited, it's edited, but it's not color corrected, right? Or
usually there's a cut negative, and the cut negative is basically the same film that came out of the camera.
Okay.
It's, you know, you have to do all the color correction and color grading and all that, you know, all that work has to be done when you do it. That's obviously the preferred way to do it, but not everybody wants to, you know, especially a movie like Demons, which is shot in Italy, you know, they're going to be lucky if they have access to the negative. And I actually don't know in the case of Demons. I'm assuming they must have.
But I think they did, but I think that's the criticism is Arrow didn't do a color correction, especially on some of the day for night stuff, apparently.
Right. And you know what? Every color technician, everybody's different. So it doesn't matter if you could put 10 people down to color grade the same movie and all 10 are going to look different. It's just there's no science to color grading. You know, it's the person's eyes and just, you know, everything's different. So it can all look different. Yeah. But in the case of Super 8, there actually was no negative per se. There was actually Super 8 is reversal stock, which basically is sort of like when you look at a 35 millimeter slide, it doesn't look reversed. It's the actual, you know, you can look at it and it looks correct. So Super 8's actually reversal stock. Later they had negative film, but to answer your question, we never cut the actual, what I would call a negative, or the original film was never cut. Everything was transferred to video and then it was finished on video.
Oh, okay.
The exception to that was when we did the Anchor Bay version, because there was so much footage to transfer, we decided it would be economically better to go out and have somebody go through the film with my notes and pull the entire take, which is basically like from the moment the slate comes into frame to where I said cut, pull the entire take and assemble new reels. So there's basically, it was like 11 or 12 reels of film and where there might've been, you know, three times that.
Yeah.
Or more. So just to cut down on the costs. So when I did the film scan, I already had that work was already prepped, which cut down on the costs and time dramatically because it's that much less footage to have to sort through.
Yeah. Cool. I'm excited to check it out on Blu-ray because I think all I've seen is a VHS quality.
Oh my. Yeah. You're in for a treat, I think.
So I'm pumped.
Yeah, no, it's I've owned the, you know, VHS and DVD, so yeah, it's gonna be quite the experience seeing it in a widescreen for the, you know, 2K restoration. So I'm pretty excited. I think what we need to do mention though,
yes,
is that JR's doing this by himself basically. So I don't know if this, we're not talking about Dead Next Door's going to be 88 films, but there's also this other campaign that he's doing, that he's doing this completely by himself. So that's need to take note on that for everybody that's listening.
The cleanup work and the whole release and everything. Yes. It's basically, I mean, there's some other guys that have done some scratch removal work for me and on the really severe stuff. And there's another guy, John Ellis, who worked for me years ago at Full Moon, who did some of the original. I had added a few shots of like gun barrels blasting, and there's a shot where the zombie gets thrown out the window with the grenade in his mouth, and we made a more dramatic explosion. We did a little bit of CG touches in that Anchor Bay version, which he went back and redid in HD so that they match, you know, the previous version. Nobody ever criticized me for that. Yeah. That was my George Lucas moment.
Yeah, as long as Jar Jar Binks doesn't show up or something.
Yeah,
or,
exactly. I think it was subtle enough that nobody, you know, it improved it, so I don't think anybody cared.
Really. I don't think and that's the thing. Like, Ridley Scott did that for Blade Runner, the final Blu-ray release. They cleaned up some effect shots and things like that, and I think when it's done in the spirit of the film and to basically match the tone of the film and it's seamless, it doesn't... no one cares, you know what I mean? But when I think George Lucas is the only real director who's gone back and just added so much stuff that it's almost a joke. Well,
went a little overboard, and that's putting it politely, I guess. But
a little bit, but that's fantastic.
But so the majority of the work. I mean, once I matched, because I had to match everything by eye again. You know, it's like all this. You're shifting from old time base to a more modern one, and I'm not going to get into all the mechanics of that, but there's just a lot of technical hurdles that had to be overcome. Once that was done, then it all had to be matched and color corrected, and then the real work began, which is still ongoing actually with some of the cleanup, you know, removing all the dirt and scratches and chemical stains, and because you know you're talking about an 8 millimeter little frame and you know these little squares, it picks up every speck of dirt, every little scratch, every, you know, kink in the film or whatever. And unfortunately, there's like a handful of like some of the coolest shots, you know, like a big throat ripping or whatever, there's just scratched to hell. And it's like, ah. But at least now, you know, we have the technology to kind of go through and squash out some of that stuff.
Yeah. So what brought it down to you guys wanted to release, I guess we would say the U.S. version, you know, U.S. release yourselves? Was this kind of always the plan? Did you, were you shopping around to other distributors or
I've talked to a few people and there's definitely interest. I don't know that there would have been the same. It was kind of like after the Anchor Bay release, that was really the biggest release that film had ever had, probably, certainly in the United States. And I was sort of like, well, if I'm not going to get a deal like that again, just because the market is just not there. You know what I mean? Nobody's going to come handing that kind of money over. And I kind of begged and beat on the door of the most, you know, a few people that I knew that I would have liked it to have been released by Shout Factory. But that didn't go anywhere. He never said no, but they never said yes. So I just decided, you know, I don't want to wait, you know, who knows how many years.
Yeah.
Because the Blu-ray market is, everything's changing to digital downloads and streaming. And, you know, I'm not sure even Blu-ray's got much life left in it aside from collectors, you know, and the diehards. I think they'll always be optical disc media, but, you know, the real market for it is fading with every passing year. So there's sort of a expiration date, I guess, for better way to describe it. For all of these, you know, titles to get the stuff out there.
I'm never going to see The Abyss on Blu-ray, I don't think.
Boy, it certainly doesn't seem like it. You can't even get a good streaming copy of that or a digital copy of it. Yeah. I don't know why that is.
Well, I think it's Cameron. I mean, we still haven't even had a new remaster of Terminator 2.
All right.
Since it's an initial, like, you know, DVD ultimate cut that it actually had where it turned everything blue.
Yeah, I think there's a number of his True Lies. I don't think there's ever been a proper, you know, you got to be right. I guess it is. He's holding up the works with those damn Avatar movies.
Exactly. Yeah.
Put the camera down and let's get this stuff remastered now.
Yeah. I would love to see a remaster of T2.
Yeah.
It's not like he's sitting there doing the work himself. Come on.
Yeah.
For God's sakes. Yeah.
Anyway, so. I can go off in a rabbit hole there. I will not. We will hold off James Cameron.
But anyways, yeah, it was sort of just I could have continued shopping it. And very likely there will be a single disc Blu-ray release from somebody else later down the line. But I figured the best way to – nobody else would release this insane package that I had in mind. I wanted to do this, you know, Ultimate Edition, which – you know, basically for the fans and the people that have liked the movie over the years. So nobody else is going to put something like that out but me. You know, nobody else is crazy enough to do it. So I just figured, why not? You know, I have full control over what I'm doing, and, you know, I'll push the button, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, since we have you on here, and most people, you know, because the thing is that, you know, I love crowdfunding, but crowdfunding has kind of went downhill just because people don't fulfill their the campaigns. So could you let people know exactly what happens if you don't hit your goal?
Oh yeah, nobody's gonna get their discs. No, I'm joking. I mean, I've already been bankrolling this thing since last summer when I did the original film scan. So regardless, this thing's coming out. That's probably one big difference. That's why I sort of treated it more as pre-orders than really like out there with panhandling. I didn't want to approach it as a panhandling sort of thing, because I've researched and I've watched a lot of what other people have done, and even 88 Films in the UK they've raised money for like Zombie Holocaust, you know, to do the transfer and stuff like that. And I know Trauma's, you know, actually doing one right now. The Bastards, they weren't supposed to do it until mine was done. I know that's where all the money's going. And
they've raised like 40 grand.
Yeah, that's right. Well, of course, that's different, because that's for a new movie.
Well, you know? One that's already filmed, too.
Exactly.
But we won't get into that.
Yeah, that's right. It hasn't been released before, I guess.
Yeah, $50,000
for
post.
Yeah, I figured, you know, worst case scenario, somebody gives me $5 and it's just $5 I don't have to come up with. Okay. And best case scenario, you know, I can put my checkbook back in my pocket and not have to finance the rest of it, so... Either way, everybody's going to get their discs and their perks.
Sweet.
So there's no, you know, it may take a little longer. I'm hoping to have all this done by October, but I'm still, you know, it's just an ongoing struggle to get all this cleaned up. And the more shots that I clean up, the more stuff I want to clean up. So it's kind of like, you know, I have to just put the, you know, put the thing down and say, that's it, it's done. But I don't want to half-ass it or rush it. I want to do it the right way.
It's really like the artist conundrum, right? Like you have your thing, you're in full control of it, you keep adding to it. You know, it's kind of like a painting, right? You think you're done, and then you want to add something here, add something there. You don't want to overdo it, but there's always something that's going to, you're going to want to improve.
Well, I would hesitate to refer to myself as an artist, but, you have to understand, this is technically the fourth time I've had to remap, to edit, to assemble this movie, because the first time we did it, I had a finished cut and I didn't do the time code was wrong. And basically I had to go back and recut the movie a second time before we even had the original VHS version. And then of course we remastered it 10 years ago for Anchor Bay. Yeah, so yeah. Really, this is the third or fourth time. I mean, I know this movie so intimately at this point, every single frame inside and out, you know, to the point where I just want to gag when I see it. But you know, I just want it to be right. I don't want to be looking at it later and go, oh, there's a speck of dust on frame 8,652 that I could have painted it out. You know, it's just, I don't want to be crazy about it, but I want to do it justice. And this is really, honestly, is probably the last time this movie will, it can't, the quality's not there. It can't go to 4K or 6K or beyond. I mean,
what about the holographic version? Is that going to be ready to go in 2022?
I guess never say never, but in my eyes, this is sort of like, you know, I just wanted to clean it up and basically have something that when I'm dead, my kid can, you know, go out and pimp it to in whatever format exists then. So this is more about archiving, or is it as much about archiving the movie as it is getting it on Blu-ray, I suppose.
Yeah. And that's great. I think, I want it now. So
so do I, but nobody's knocking on my door to come and help paint all these damn scratches out.
In all honesty, if I lived near you, I would definitely come over and try to help for sure.
Well, I probably could have gotten some volunteers to come in and help with this, because it's really just drudgery work, you know, going through it frame by frame. It's not like I'm an artiste with the paintbrush going, you know, oh, this is going to be so much better. But it's like literally there's been shots where they were so grunged up in the old versions that once I've cleaned them up, I'm not going to be gay and say I cried over it or, you know, something ridiculous like that. But it's literally, you look at the shots and I just can't believe it.
Yeah.
When we finished that trailer, you know, and which I went through and cleaned it up and added a little bit of just a smattering of noise reduction just to cut down on the grain a little bit. I was shocked when I watched it on my TV for the first time, because I'm so used to watching it on the computer. I was shocked at it, you know, that actually could be done on Super 8 film.
Awesome.
Now, are you going to be releasing this through your label, or is this?
Yeah, it'll be Tempe.
Okay,
like it's not Tempe DVD. I'm going to have to change that, but
yeah,
because it's technically not a DVD, although there's a DVD in there. But
yeah, but you have four different versions.
There'll be the VHS version, and the Anchor Bay version will be on the second disc, which is a DVD. And then the two HD versions will be on the Blu-ray.
Cool.
Pretty much whatever's HD will be on the Blu-ray. Whatever's standard definition will be on the DVD. Yeah. And then the CD is the soundtrack CD is the third disc.
That's quite the endeavor, man.
It's a lot of work. Yeah. The day doesn't go by that I'm not kicking my ass going, what were you thinking?
Because you're doing this on top of all your other responsibilities.
Yeah, and that's what's taking – I mean, honestly, that's what's taking so long. But years ago, I would have been able to just, you know, just put everything else aside and just do it. But, you know, I've got a mortgage to pay and a wife and kid to feed and another kid on the way in August. Man. And so, you know, I've got to meet those obligations first.
Yes. Well, congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's exciting. Well, so if everyone who's listening right now – go to Indiegogo, and if you haven't pre-ordered your Blu-ray, do it. Is there an easy link to send people to, or should they just Google Dead Next Door Indiegogo?
Yeah, I mean, if you go to Indiegogo and type in Dead Next Door, I would assume nothing else will come up unless somebody's making a sequel I don't know about. But I doubt it.
And the perks are really cool. I mean, the main one that people are just interested in, the Blu-ray, it's $35. You get the, you know, the Blu-ray DVD CD combo, right?
Yes.
And
that's
then
the that's the main three disc set. Yeah.
And then for $30, you get the just the VHS.
Right, and that's actually it's just a limited edition of the original version. That's actually not the new remastered version. I figured people would want the original. If you never were able to buy it on VHS and you're one of these crazy maniacs that are still watching VHS that have to have it, that's that one's for you.
But the one that I will pitch to everybody is the $50 one, because you get a lot of your films that you produced and directed with that, right? Is that the
one? That's that's actually just kind of a bolt-on, an add-on thing that's just like 12 of the other 12 DVDs of you know, the Witch House sequels and all the Tempe stuff that I've released of on, you know, that I've been produced or directed, I guess.
Which I recommend highly.
It's basically just fodder to watch while you're waiting for your main thing to come through.
Yeah.
I'm
pushing for that one 100%. Even though I own all that stuff, I'm not gonna do it. But I bought all that stuff from your store.
Yeah,
too,
who needs? I'm not sure people need one copy of that stuff, let alone two.
Well, no, I think Ozone and Polymorph is enough said. So
awesome.
Yeah, and really, I mean, those discs. I mean, they're almost all special editions. So they're just so packed with stuff that you'll literally be watching for hours until your brain goes numb.
Yeah. I'll stand behind. No big deal.
If this is extremely successful for you, are there a couple other movies you'd want to try to give this treatment to?
Robot Ninja.
I mean,
Robot Ninja.
Yeah. Robot Ninja. Right. Robot Ninja and Skin Alive, which are shot on 16mm. You know, I guess if I go through this process, Robot Ninja still to this day is the only one that hasn't been released on DVD.
Oh, trust me, I know.
Blu-ray. So, and I do get a fair number of requests for it, although I'm not sure the number of requests are enough to actually, you know, finance doing it. But I've had a couple of labels inquire about that one as well. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that's
cool.
That's the idea. But I know Skin Alive had a fair amount of film damage that we just sort of I turned the other cheek when I released it on DVD and just said people are going to just have to live with it because, you know, there's no way to clean that up at that time. Now I could go in and clean it up, but I'm not sure, you know, the five people that are going to want that movie on Blu-ray are going to be worth it. No offense.
Well, just to say, I'm still a little bitter when you first came on the show and you said your sophomore attempt was a slum. And you're referring to this movie, correct?
Robot Ninja?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my sophomore slump. Yeah,
I was not. I don't approve of that message.
Robot Ninja is such a fun idea and fun film. It's just like, I don't know. There's charm for miles in that one. So.
Well, that may be the case, but it was a failed execution on my part. In my defense, I will say. But, you know, I don't know. It's nobody even remembers the movie. I mean, the only people that remember are people that were able to find a copy on VHS years ago, but it's been out of circulation so long. And now with the superhero craze, you know, I guess not that it's really, it's sort of an anti-superhero movie, but I suppose somebody wants to see it.
I do. Well, the thing is, the tape's just so damn dark, you know?
Like, well, the whole movie is.
I mean, we
shot with like three lights. You know, you're shooting 16mm, and it's almost entirely at night.
Yeah.
So it was
cleaning up even just a little bit would be nice. But, that's one that I'm have always been looking forward to just because I've loved that movie as a kid. So, and still do to this day.
Crazy man, you.
Well, dude,
there should definitely be some more detail, a lot more detail, I should say, now that I've gone through this experience. Because I would have thought the same thing with Dead Next Door. It's like there's no way. You know, there's like one shot in Dead Next Door, if I can diverge back to that, where there was a scene where the two soldiers are coming in the basement. It's usually a very, very dark shot. And I swear to God, I didn't realize all this time, once I saw the film scan, there's actually a crew member kneeling in the back And it's always, he's in the shadow. So once you color grade it, you can't even see him. But I never noticed that in my life before. Nice. I mean, I've been dealing with this movie for 30 years. So that's the kind of detail that you can, you know, that a film scan brings out. And so I think it would be Robot Ninja and even Skin Alive would be a huge improvement. It's not going to help with the movie at all, but you'll be able to see what's there better.
Awesome. Well, we are waiting with bated breath. So,
like I said, you and five other guys.
Exactly. So we got a couple movies to talk about. And Brad, did you give JR and you know, ask him what he wanted to cover, or how did we? Because you just told me, hey, we got JR and we're doing Scarecrows and Demons.
Yeah, well, no, it was about the campaign. I reached out to JR because I wanted to promote the campaign. Because I mean, he's one of the no reason to blush here, but he's one of the reasons why I wanted to become a filmmaker. And he was early on. He was one of the very first directors I discovered by myself. So yeah, he's always had a big impact on my life. So you know, when I saw the campaign, I want to help out in any way possible.
Totally.
So you know, I asked him and. Oh, no problem, man. He just, you know, I was like, hey, what do you want to cover? And he just said Scarecrows and Demons. I'm like, all right, cool. You know, nice. That's easy enough. I mean, Demons came out as a steal from Synapse, earlier on in 2014, and then they were
released
single disc. Yeah,
it's a little bit on the old side, but.
Single disc late 2014. But anyways, I think it still needs to be spoken about because the Arrow Blu-rays have existed for so long, and these kind of came about, and they were a little bit more expensive with the Steelbooks, and then they became the single disc they were still single disc, but they special feature lists, basically. Yeah. They
commentary lists, special feature lists.
Yeah, so I think it still deserves to be spoken about. Also, Scarecrows. So,
oh, yeah.
I think it's good picks here.
Awesome. Well, let's jump in and talk about Lamberto Bava's Demons.
Yes. No, I think my reason for Demons was I still that I mean that disc sort of ties directly into this what I want to accomplish with Dead Next Door. It was such an awesome package that they put together, and the restoration was so absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's probably still one of the best looking Blu-rays I've ever seen. I was just blown away
I agree.
To where I never you know, I paid $40 or $50 or whatever it was that they were asking for, but I was more than happy to do it because it was. You know, everything you could want from it.
Yeah. It looks like they still do have some steelbooks available.
It's just crazy. Why aren't people buying that? I don't know what that's all about.
Well, I think, how many was it? Was it 5,000 of each?
I don't even think it was that much. 3,000.
3,000. I mean, 3,000 is still a lot to push. Plus the price point was a big thing,
man.
Too.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
but they're totally worth it.
Yeah. Well, I had bought the Arrow Films double pack steelbook, and I was like, ooh, I'll just get this. It's $20. I was all excited. I was like, fuck you, Synapse. You know, get the Arrow discs. And
I told you, man. I warned you.
Well,
that goes back to the old saying, you get what you pay for.
Well, they actually, I didn't literally say fuck you, Synapse, but they actually on Twitter.
You're not saying it now.
We'll get to that. On Twitter, I said, I'm getting this because it's cheaper. And they actually replied to me saying, well, our transfer is way better. So I guess, you know, do what you want to do.
Well,
but and,
it's
I, and at
funny
first,
because,
I was like,
yeah,
what? These guys are just, you know, prideful motherfuckers, you know? But and at first, I took it negatively. And then now that I read into.
Well, no, I remember that. I remember that because I was like, I think I texted you and I was like, they have a point.
yeah. Because, totally.
I mean, I bought the Arrow. I bought the Arrow release as well. And I mean, it was decent for what it was. I mean, the first one, but the second film, Demons 2, was horrific. Like, I usually, like, if it's a bad scan, if it's, you know, an old HD master, no big deal. But, you know, look at it and it's like, man, the Anchor Bay DVD that they did that double pack with the Argento set was a lot better than even this, it feels. And
yeah, and that's a step in the wrong direction if you're not better than the previous release.
Yeah, and, the, you know, I, because I've dude, I've probably spent like $500 on these two movies through the years, buying the DVDs and, you know, stuff from the UK. So I just like Dead Next Door, I've grown up with this movie and I know it from front to back. And these new releases that Synapse did, they're just fantastic. They really are. Both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Demons in the theater. You know, I'm dating myself now as an old man, but whatever. But and this looks so much better than I remember it looking, even in the theater. You know, the theater, you're always at the mercy of some crappy old print that they, you know, that where there's like parts of it cut out because there was damage or something, and you know, it's been run through the projector a billion times. But this was just, it was just such a magnificent improvement over any other version of that I'd seen, because I had the Anchor Bay DVD, you know, from the earlier one as well. But it's definitely, I mean, anybody that considers themselves a fan of horror movies should have that Synapse disc.
Yeah, I mean,
in
this,
their collection.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the biggest one, aside from the visuals, is the audio's really, I mean, I think it's just 2.0, but man, it sounds great. It really does. And especially with a movie like this, with all the action that's going on, especially the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have, Billy Idol, we have Motley Crue, we have, of course, the Simonetti score, Rick Springfield.
yeah.
You know, it's just, except I'm trying to remember everybody here, but I mean, this is a soundtrack that I've had on repeat forever. It's a metal soundtrack too, basically, aside from Rick Springfield. But, just putting it together in this package and finally seeing, because I had the Arrow release, but putting this on for the very first time, it felt really, really right and really, really good. Because it felt like it was supposed to. And almost watching it for the first time. I remember watching Demons for the first time, and I couldn't believe that somebody who had a dirt bike in a movie theater. So, you know, I think this goes without saying, because I think pretty much all of our listeners have seen this movie. But, if you're one of those people that got the Arrow release, you might want to look. You know, even if you just want to buy the DVD, the bare bones Blu-rays that they put out, I suggest you do, because they're only like $15 now.
Yeah, I got the standalone ones just because I got the Arrow one and it has some special features and it has commentaries. I was like, well, here's my special features. Here's the Arrow ones, and I'll get the, I'll spend an extra $30 on top of the $20 I spent. I'm down $50 total for Demons, as opposed to spending another $100 basically.
It's tough to be a collector these days. Because if I get one, just too many titles.
If I got Demons, I got to get Demons 2. I'm not going to get just one or the other.
I did not buy Demons 2, and I actually want to now that I want to get the Steelbook now that I had bought the first one. I was never particularly a fan of the second one.
I've never seen it all the way through. I started watching it last night, and the transfer on the Arrow disc was so bad. I just said, I was getting frustrated, and I was like, you know what? I want to kind of watch this in all its glory for the first time, and the transfer was so distracting with, it was like excess grain, and then no, it was just weird, and noise, digital noise, just, it just looked horrible, so I shut it off, and proceeded to go to Synapse, or go to Amazon, and track down those, the standalone.
I've always been a fan of Demons too. Just how it plays out. I'm a big fan of films in apartment complexes, like when they're trapped. So I was always kind of biased because as soon as that happens, and I'm just into it. And I don't know. I think it plays hand in hand. I mean, they go so well together, and also. Just some of the same cast members show up in this one. It's kind of like a remake at the same time, because I think three or four of the actors that are in the first one are in this one. I find it hilarious at the same time.
Is it like same scenario, different location, basically?
Kind of.
Yeah. Because it's not in a movie theater. It's just actually at a, apartment complex, and their H.R. Argento's character is watching, the film that they're watching in the theater, the first one, and that's when everything goes to shit.
Yeah,
I actually haven't seen it since the VHS probably days, so I should probably give it another. I have friends that love that movie that, even more than the first one, and I always get in fist fights with them about it.
But it's definitely not better. It's definitely not better than the first one, but I you know, it's one of those that kind of always gets shit on just a tiny bit. And it's like, I think you're comparing. I think people compare it to the first one too much. I think as a standalone movie, it's pretty great. I mean, just the fact that Bobby Rhodes is in it again, and instead of playing the pimp, he's playing the main bodybuilder that's in the bottom with all the bodybuilders that are working out that kind of become the heroes in a way.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that. Yeah,
it's just really it's just a cheesy movie, but I've always dug it quite a bit.
I love gyms in the 80s. Whenever they show, whenever an 80s movie goes to the gym, I always find it really funny.
Oh yeah, there's no hiding what era that was shot in. Toxic Avenger being one of the classic examples of that. Oh my. Really takes you back.
Yep, it's great. I'm like, nobody works out like that. Nobody, I don't know.
Right.
It's odd. But that's when I stopped watching it, because once it got dark, I was like, oh geez.
Yeah, and I kind of feel obligated to buy it, because I hate when you have the first movie and not the later ones in your collection. It's sort of like you feel like some piece of your heart is missing or something. It's
kind of. I still don't own X-Men 3.
Well, I can't fault you there.
It's fuck Brett Ratner. Now, Brett, how many Demons movies have there been? You say there was there's Demons 3.
Well, it's The Ogre is that one, and also known as The Church.
I believe that was actually not even a Demons movie, right? They just shot it in a separate thing.
It's kind of like the same thing as the House, like the later House movies, like The Horror Show and La Casa, whatever the spinoff was.
Right, exactly, yeah.
At. So, yeah, they don't – I think the only thing that kind of transfers over is the filmmakers themselves. They don't correlate at all, really. Mm-hmm. I don't even think there's any like subtle hints or references to the older films. So, because I apologize. There was Demons 3, The Ogre, and then there was The Church, and then there
Which was
sort
of the unofficial Demons 4, I guess. Right? Is that how that?
Yeah,
works?
Yeah, yeah. And then there was God. I think there was Black Demons is considered one.
Oh my gosh, they really milked that. I don't. I kind of gave up after the second one.
I think even Cemetery Man is considered part of the franchise too. Because I think the alternate title for that woman's. I'm pretty sure.
That may have been. The marketing department at a certain licensor that I remember years ago, when Japan first put out The Dead Next Door, they had released this cool laser disc in VHS, but they called it The Dead Next Door, Another Evil Dead, which it is most certainly not. And they could have got us in a lot of trouble for doing that, but it would have been on them, I guess. But sometimes these companies just, they don't know how else to sell a movie. So they call it whatever they want. Hmm. Might as well have been another Star Wars.
Right.
Then, why not? That wouldn't have worked. That wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think what happened is I always mispronounce the last name, but Sauvier, one of the guys that's in Demons 1, well, he's in the film. He's the one that kind of discovers the mass, the Nosferatu tomb. Well, I think he directed Demons, The Church, and The Ogre. And Argento produced.
So I
just think that's kind of how it, mostly I think that's kind of just what they probably did for, the same thing as with Dawn of the Dead with Zombie, when they did Dawn of the Dead 2 and Zombie 2, that type of thing. They need to market somewhere as a standalone movie. It probably didn't work. There were probably hits on VHS and rentals here, so they wanted to, call it a sequel. To play off the success. I don't know how that worked out. I'm just guessing.
Well, it worked out well enough for there to be four or five of them, I guess.
Yeah. No, there's definitely more, too. I just honestly, I can't think of them right now.
Yeah.
Of course, there's, quantity over quality is not necessarily.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, he had Zombie 3, 4, and 5. He had Zombie 5, the Killing Burgers, for Christ's sake, you know? So, I mean, yeah, they all did it. Yeah. So,
Lamberto Bava, his father was Mario Bava. And
correct.
So he did Demons 1 and 2. Are you familiar with the rest of his filmography at all? Or do you, I mean...
Lamberto,
because I, you know, I...
Oh, yeah, totally.
I don't follow... I think with, like, Italian cinema, I feel like I'm playing catch-up with a lot of these Italian flicks.
Well, there's so many of them, it's difficult. Yeah, and half the stuff's never been released here, which makes it more difficult.
Right. But it seems like Demons was such a huge hit, but it was probably a huge hit because Argento's name was attached to it, right?
Well, I remember at the time when that first came out, there was that whole thing about, you know, it's because it said Dario Argento presents. I mean, his name was bigger than the title of the movie. And there was that whole thing about, you know, did he actually make the movie, or did Lamberto Bava direct it or whatever? And
well, people still considered an Argento film.
Right, know? Exactly. Which, just, I mean, it really, I don't think is, but, you know.
No.
It doesn't play an Argento movie.
But they push that just the same thing as any time Wes Craven presents anything. It's, you know, they try to slap his name all over it rather than the real director.
Right.
You know,
like Spielberg and Poltergeist.
I was just saying, whenever even Anchor Bay released those sets, they had a Dario Argento set. They were releasing all those movies, but they put these two in a double pack with his name on it. You know, our Dario Argento collection.
Well, there's always confusion. I know when I started producing movies for other people, it's the same thing happens. It's like the person who's a little bit better known than the guy that made the movie that nobody knows, they tend to gravitate towards, oh, this is so-and-so's movie or such-and-so. I mean, to this day, I still get the lion's share of the credit for Skinned Alive, for instance, which I really don't want. So it just sort of goes with the territory, and I'm not saying anybody knows who I am compared to Dario Argento, but... Yeah. You know, that's on an even bigger scale. The one thing I was going to say about Demons is I do believe all the soundtrack, since we were talking about that earlier, the heavy metal stuff, and I think a lot of that probably was Argento's influence. Just if you've looked at the Italian cut of Dawn of the Dead or Zombie, it has that same sort of frenetic pacing and loud music constantly being, you know, assaulting your ears. And that was Argento. So I suspect Argento had a big hand in the post-production, at least.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, back to your question, Sean, but Lamberto Bava, yeah. I mean, a couple podcasts ago, I talked about Shock and Macabre, but he's also done films like, Rambo movie? Blast Fighter, which is coming out from 88 Films, I believe. And then A Blade in the Dark, which is on Anchor Bay, Anchor Bay's label. But yeah, I mean, his first like 10 films, 15 films, they're available over here, but it's like everything after that, they're really hard to find. And mostly he jumped into TV. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think his like last film I might know is, like Graveyard Disturbance. I have that on tape, but, I honestly haven't seen the rest of his filmography like after that, because it's just they're not available over here. Well, and if they are, they're bootlegs and they don't have subtitles.
Yeah.
So
he never seemed to rise, you know, out of the umbrella of his father, you know, to kind of come on his own.
Well, that would be a difficult thing to do. I think so.
I mean, Mario Bava is iconic, but.
Yeah. I mean, he did Shock with his dad. He co-directed that with his dad, and he did a really, really great job with Macabre. I think that's one of his better films. But, I mean, he has Demons 1 and 2. I mean, he's a different sort of filmmaker. Mm-hmm. His dad had a lot more classier films, you know, and he kind of did more fun in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a certain aesthetic to kind of Mario Bava's work, you know, very, very eerie, very drawn out, very, I don't know, stuff like Rabid Dogs and, you know, Twitch of the Death Nerve and Hatchet for the Honeymoon, $5 for an August Moon. He just has just this really odd, like, pacing to his films, but they really work. Very characterized and stuff like that. Lamberto just wanted to make fun, you know, you just fucking fireworks going off everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what all the movies, I mean, like this, Demons is a prime example of, you know, a guy that has a samurai sword and a dirt bike running along the seats for some odd reason in the theater and chopping off zombies' heads. You know, but it's a fun movie.
Yeah, you
don't
see that every day.
You know, he's a different style of filmmaker, but I mean, he kind of had the eye of his dad in a way, but also wanted to, you know, amplify everything times 100. So,
well, the one thing you got to say too about those Italian directors is they didn't just direct horror movies. You know, it wasn't like George Romero here where he kind of got pigeonholed into horror and nobody would ever let him do anything again.
Yeah.
You know, these guys just did whatever was what they could get, and it included, you know, sword and sandal movies or action movies or whatever.
Westerns.
You know, I mean,
tons of
westerns.
Yeah.
Americans were sick of westerns, they were making westerns.
Yeah, I mean, even Fulci alone, he has comedies under his belt at first, and then he has, you know, westerns. And it wasn't until towards probably the last 20 movies of his career he actually jumped into horror, and then he just couldn't get out of it, you know.
Yeah, and you got to respect that because that's, I mean, to be able to do so many different genres, I mean, that's the thing American directors very, very rarely have the opportunity to do.
Yeah, and that's why I hold Fulci up there so high is because I, you know, even though some of his films are really hard to, you know, come together and make sense at the end, he has a hell of an eye. I mean, just watching westerns like Four of the Apocalypse and then watching, you know, Zombie, it just doesn't even seem like the same director, you know, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing in a way, but I always give it to him because it's hard to tell what where he's going with his films.
Well, you know, the thing too that people forget is every time, especially when you make movies on different budgets and different genres, and every experience is different. You know, when you go out and make any movie, you could have the best of intentions when you start it, and things just, the weather doesn't cooperate, or you got egotistical actors to deal with, or the money guy pulls out, or the company takes your film over and finishes it without you. I mean, it's so many variables.
Yeah.
I mean, making any movie, that it's a miracle any of this stuff gets made at all, really. Yeah. I mean, it's just too much can go wrong.
Jared, what was the theater like, the crowd like when you saw this in the theater? Were you with, was it a few people in the theater? Do you remember like what the atmosphere was like?
There wasn't a ton of people in there. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about I can't remember what year this came out, but I was in high school or at the tail end of high school, maybe. Yeah. And it wasn't a midnight screening or anything like that. It was just, you know, I think I don't believe I went opening weekend, so that could have something to do with it. But it was not like a crazy audience. You know, I've been in things like that. I went to a midnight double feature of Evil Dead and A Nightmare on Elm Street theater here when I was in high school, and that crowd was bananas. I mean, bananas. They're running up and down the aisles, throwing popcorn, screaming and yelling to the point where the theater manager came out, they turned the movie off and said, if you guys don't settle down, we're asking you all to leave. And they were barely into the first movie at that point.
You know, nothing has really changed aside from no theater managers actually come out anymore.
Right, exactly. Because there is no theater manager. It's all automated.
Yeah.
It's like Demons.
So, yeah. So, but yeah, back to the disc. If people are interested at all, yes, the two disc steelbooks, they're still available through Diabolik and through their website, and I think even Amazon has them. And they're about $45 a piece, so you're going to spend about $90 on Demons.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a collector, it's definitely worth it. But you know, if you're already have the Arrow releases and you're just looking for the bare bones, those are about $15 per disc, which is pretty cheap for a Blu-ray these days. But I mean, you're also just, you know, paying for the bare bones, just the movie people. But, you know, it's a hell of a trip. It's the same transfer and it looks fantastic. So.
Yeah.
And I got to give props to Don May from Synapse, because I didn't realize until I was in the middle of restoring Dead Next Door exactly how much work goes into this whole process. And I remember reading a lot of his reports on all the work that was going on to Demons and how many, you know, the problems they were having. And it's especially, you know, obviously he loves the movie, otherwise he wouldn't have licensed it, but you got to really love a movie to spend all that time and money and effort to go through, you know, to restore something like that. Well, it's worth it. I mean, it's just worth it to buy a copy for that alone. Just to appreciate
totally
the effort that went into it.
They're running into a lot of the same kind of stuff with Suspiria, I think, and it's being pushed out. But that's the thing I wanted to talk about with Synapse is Don May Jr. You know, he's very vocal about, here's all the problems we're running into, here's what we're doing to fix it, here's where we were a month ago where we had no idea we would even be able to finish this. I really love, like, because he'll give these updates, and you can just, like, the passion is just oozing off the page when you're reading this. And they did the same thing with, because I looked back and I found some stuff they'd wrote when they were doing Demons on these Blu-rays, and it's just, you know, the transfer or the negative they got, you know, hadn't been, or Arrow hadn't color corrected it properly, or because they said there in the beginning there is, like, it's supposed to be nighttime in some scenes and it's bright, you know, or there's like a yellow light, and he details like why they think it should have been day for night or whatever, and I love that he's that passionate about what he's doing. I don't feel like I get that from a lot of these other labels, you know. He's definitely, they stand above, and you know, if you're going to get a Synapse release, that they've done everything possible to give the best, you know, release ever, you know, the end all be all release, you know. So
I actually know Don a little bit. We used to run in a lot of the same circles, but I met him when they had first put he had Elite Entertainment, and they were the first ones to release Night of the Living Dead on Laserdisc. It tells you how long ago that was. And from then till now, I mean, he's a very meticulous dude. You know, he's going to make, if his company's name is on it, you know that it's been done to the absolute best that it can be. I mean, there's no
doubt. I don't think any of their releases are subpar whatsoever.
No, and that's a very rare thing in this day and age, because nobody's getting rich putting these old movies out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's not as much money in it now as there used to be. So, you know, for anybody to continue to put that kind of effort into it is admirable.
Yeah. So, but yeah. So Demons 1 and 2.
I was trying to find that Facebook update that he had when he detailed.
Well, I mean, he did the thing with Popcorn. I know that he recently spoke on behalf of Popcorn, because it's been, you know, in their pocket for a long, long time. The same thing with the Kindred. They've been trying to put out the Kindred for a long time, but I think that's more or less legal issues with that. But yeah, I mean, you know, it just, the thing is, I just wish that some of their titles got more publicity, because I mean, they just had the Long Weekend come out, and you didn't hear anything about that, and it's a good movie, you know. But
I think they have their own built-in audience. I don't think they're so reliant necessarily on the you know getting it into the retail world. I mean, obviously they're making money or they wouldn't still be in business. You know, I mean, it's so they're making enough to cover their nut and can move on to the next title.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think with them, you know, they've built up a, you know, quite the fan base themselves, just what they do and the releases, you know, they're very dependable. You know, if you buy one of their releases, and the thing is, they're always, aside from Demons, Steelbooks, their prices are always really, really good. I mean, it's between like $12.99 and $17.99 for their Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, definitely not taking advantage of that whatsoever, which is kind of funny, because they do put all this work into it. It kind of it's hard to justify, because, you know, you have companies like, you know, Scream Factory and, you know, other companies say, you know, how much it costs to actually, you know, make this film what it is. That's the reason. And the same thing with like Nightbreed, you know, justifying how much it, you know, that price point. And then, but you have all these like things from, you know, Synapse saying about how hard it is to do this film and remaster, and then they slap a $12 price tag on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you add up all the hours, that's the thing. It's like, you know, most people know what it means to work on an hourly wage. You know, they've done it or they're still doing it or whatever. And you factor in how many hours it takes to properly restore something and put a package like that together. It's, you know, They're certainly not cutting any corners.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I was curious. I was wondering why they did the bare bones Demons instead of just, you know, releasing the special edition again. You know, maybe not at $14.99, but maybe have all the special features and put it at like $25. You know what I mean? I feel like they would have sold
it,
more.
It may have been a licensing thing. I don't know this for a fact, but perhaps they were only able to do so many copies and in a certain way.
I guess Callum Waddle was involved in the special features, apparently.
I actually didn't know that.
On the UK, he wrote the liner notes or whatever, but I guess his he was involved with the documentaries apparently. And there, what's weird is some of the documentaries or interviews they got wasn't on the Arrow release, but it said it was credited to him on the Synapse Steelbooks. It's all confusing. Hmm. So I was trying to decide whether or not to get the Steelbooks or not. I was trying to compare all the special features, and there definitely is unique ones to the Synapse Steelbooks.
Now, see, how much time and effort did you put into that when you could have just went ahead and bought it?
I should have. It was late last night.
Sometimes we try to save, 10 cents and wind up spending 25 cents in energy, I guess.
So. Well, I saved about...
Just do it, Sean. Just do it.
Exactly. Peer pressure.
I saved about 40 bucks. No, not 40 bucks. 40 or 50 bucks.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about both movies, then you're getting up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I put in far too much time, probably.
Well, how much did you time to put in Scarecrows?
Scarecrows.
What do you mean? To buy it? I saw that I saw that shit come up on when they announced it. I was like, pre-order right away.
Well, pre-ordered it from Amazon, right? So you had the pre-order price protection, although...
Yes.
I think I literally got a refund of like 1 cent.
I got a penny too. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah.
When they do that, it's like, really? Come on. But
it's not even worth the accounting department's costing them more than the amount to refund.
Oh, well. But let's move in to discussion about William Wesley's Scarecrows.
At first, it seemed easy. Take the money that dropped from the sky. But they forgot that greed grips the mind like a vice. Turning the simplest dreams to nightmares.
I'm going to get you, Bert, you son of a bitch.
Now it's personal.
They landed in the field of a scarecrow.
Just some kind of superstitious things that are used to ward off evil spirits.
Fired at this thing. It just kept coming. Bullets don't stop it.
What are you talking about?
Man! Like human!
Somebody is trying to scare us out of here.
It's a deadly race. In which the hunters and the hunted are destined to become victims. The Scarecrow. Kill it or become it. Scarecrows, the stuff nightmares are made of.
This is a more interesting movie in some regards for me because they didn't have a theatrical release, and the people that do know about this movie saw it, the VHS sitting in a video store. It's sort of the polar opposite of Demons. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and there it was.
My first experience was actually Netflix streaming at like 1 a.m. A couple years back.
Oh, no kidding.
They had it. And I think the transfer was pretty bad, and it was just...
Well, again, it's a dark movie, and that's part of the problem. You don't have a good transfer, and then it's a world of hurt.
But I remember having a lot of fun with it. And, beer was involved, too. I had a lot of fun with it. And then, so that's the thing. When I saw that Scream Factory was going to release this on Blu-ray, I was like... get this to me now, because I would love to see this in HD.
Well, I wanted it because I've always loved the movie. And I owned a copy of the VHS, and I had it on Laserdisc, of all things. But it was one of those movies that always had this weird amount of mystery around it, because, and the Blu-rays answered so many questions, because I didn't realize this movie was shot years before it actually came out. In fact, they were shooting Scarecrows the year I started The Dead Next Door in 1985. Huh. I mean, it didn't come out till 88 or something, I think. So, it sat around waiting to be distributed. It's just one of those movies that's sort of mysterious. Like, where did it come from? How did it get made? you know, I just, because it's such a polished movie for what it is. You know, you almost takes you by surprise. Yeah. You don't. You're like, whoa, where did this come from? And for years, I've tried to scrounge up every bit scrap of information I could find about that movie and the filmmaker and everything else. And it, you know, it was a dead end. But of course, this was the pre-internet days. But
yeah, well, I think a part of what happened was I think the director died a few years after, or a year or 2 years after it was released, or something.
No, he's still alive because he's made other films. Oh yeah,
they must have been talking about someone else, and I misheard in the.
Yeah, no, he directed a zombie movie with Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh,
yeah, because he's on one of the commentary tracks.
Okay, is he?
See, yeah, this is how much
unless he's speaking from beyond the grave.
No! You're talking about the one of the actors.
One of the actors. Okay, I
remember them saying that he died shortly thereafter it was made. It was I don't know if it was in commentary or the spe- I've only watched one of the special features.
It was one of the interviews.
But yeah,
that's my bad, everybody.
It's okay.
Yeah, I want to put poor William Wesley. You got him 1 foot, 2 feet in the grave.
Yeah, if I would have read the back of this disc, I would have known. Oh, director commentary, William Wesley.
Well, it could have been old, but
how
old could it be?
Right. You know.
I actually had this movie. I bought it on DVD when MGM put the DVD out, and I swear to God, when the Blu-ray was announced, I took it off the shelf, and the damn thing was still in shrink wrap. I have a very bad habit. I did that with The Incredible Melting Man and a number of these other MGM titles where I buy it, and then I don't get time to watch it, and then before I do, it comes out on Blu-ray, and then I wind up selling it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's going to happen to me with some of these Blu-rays, but I have a compulsive I compulsively have to unshrink wrap everything that I buy. But then it sits there for years, and then I finally watch it.
Well, see, that's why I learned to just leave the shrink wrap on it. Then I know I haven't watched it. So when I'm going through the shelf, I'm like, okay, this one's fair game.
I should do that. Instead, I make letterbox lists now.
That's a pro tip there.
That's a fantastic tip. Brad.
I actually can't vouch for the DVD quality because I never watched it. I've only seen VHS and Laserdisc.
Brad, how about you? What was your first experience with Scarecrows?
I don't know. Probably like the mid-90s. I, you know, have the tape for it. I watched it then. I can't say I was that big of a fan when I very first saw it when I was younger. I was probably like, you know, 12, 13 years old, I'm guessing. But it wasn't until the DVD came out that, I purchased that from MGM. And gave it another shot. I enjoyed it just because it was such an odd movie. When the DVD came out, I was a little bit more into kind of, you know, who's doing what, who the directors are, you know, where the movie come from. And I agree with JR is that it kind of came out of nowhere. Like even the only people that kind of had a career, I would say, that was extremely successful was the special effects artists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, because everybody else, I mean, they were in movies, they, you know, did so and so, but he was the only one that, you know, came from. But at that time, you know, even at when I first watched, I mean, he wasn't working on some of the bigger films that he is now, but he, you know, got pulled in by like K&B effects and he started doing stuff for them.
No, so, that's the thing, because between the time they shot it and the time it actually came out, he actually had a name.
Yeah,
by the time it came out, they splattered his name on the box cover, like, you know, as a selling point. Which
yeah, working
sort of
with
funny.
Like, you know, Rick Baker, and then working with, you know, Kurtzman, Nicotero, and Berger, and stuff like that later on. But I was excited when the Blu-ray came out to give it another shot. And I enjoy. It's one of those films that I enjoy more and more every time. Just because I don't know, I now how old I am and being in, you know, paying more attention to the film industry and the films, like, this is very amateur film. You know, this is definitely something that I would try to do as, you know, a teenager trying to make on a weekend or something. And you can
see some of the budgetary restraints, you know, like with the airplane footage and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot of recycling, and there's that one aerial shot I know when they drive by the truck driving, and it's like the same shot like three times.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell that there was obviously there's budgetary restraints to it. And the weird thing about that movie that I always thought when I saw it on VHS, I felt like there was stuff missing. And the VHS I saw was the R-rated version. And then later I got the Laserdisc, which was unrated or uncut. And I thought, oh, this is going to be good. And all it was some more gore scenes. So I still watch this movie and I'm like, I feel like something's missing.
Yeah,
like it's like there. But I think a lot of it's just because they don't spell everything out for you.
Yeah, the plot.
They leave it open to your own interpretation when you watch it.
Yeah, the plot.
Which a lot of people
simple.
Hate. You know, some people don't want to think; they just want to sit there and smoke their doobie and be entertained. You know, so some people are hostile towards this movie. I think for that reason.
Right. The plot's very basic. These military guys or ex-military or whatever, they're criminals, right? They pull off some sort of heist, and they basically end up in a field at a farmhouse with killer scarecrows.
Yes. And it has a great plot device with the radio announcer at the beginning and end, because it creates this picture in your head of this big heist, you know, that they pulled off, but you never actually see any of that.
Like the Reservoir Dogs, you know, thing.
Exactly.
And we never got to see the heist.
That's right.
But
so it's a good device.
Yeah, no, it leaves mystery, because you don't know how big the heist was or anything like that, and it dives down into, you know, from it could have been an action movie, then they get into this like supernatural element with these scarecrows. But yeah, it's the one thing that with the film, even watching it, you know, just, you know, last week or so again, is that it is a little confusing in a way, because it really doesn't get into the story all that much. But I kind of like that at the same time, because it leaves mystery that, you know, these three farmers that are still on this land as scarecrows are turning people into scarecrows, but those people are still alive, maybe? Because even
the
scarecrows...
Well, that's the thing. It's such a great skull fuck, because they never explain anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like you're totally left to your own imagination to go, what the hell just happened here?
And I think that how I read it is that once they actually get you, I mean, obviously you're turned into a scarecrow, but maybe you're kind of like in purgatory. Because there's these scarecrows that we see constantly through the film. I tell you, if you took out those breathing scarecrows that they kind of stay on, the film would be like 10 minutes shorter. But,
absolutely.
You know, but it's like those never move. So are, you know, those are the people that they have kidnapped and trapped, and they're just standing there breathing.
Right.
You know, I don't know. That's kind of how I read it. I think it's a fun movie. I really do, especially how small and, you know, kind of independent this was. It was just it's one of those really independent films, but just extremely polished. They just have the right crew behind it, you know,
and a great freaking music score, and which really makes the movie feel much bigger than it actually is.
Yeah,
I bought the soundtrack because I was so overjoyed that there was actually a soundtrack CD of that.
Wow, really?
Yeah,
it's incredible,
because it is a great soundtrack. It's a great score, especially the opening. You know, it just really sets the whole tone for the whole movie.
Yeah, which sounds great on Screen Factory's transfer as well.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody could complain about that presentation. It's the sound sounds great. The picture looks great. You can actually see a lot of those darker details that were lost in the earlier versions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I had this on tape, and you know, it was extremely dark movie, and it was kind of hard to see some things. But this, you know, I think that this is an old HD master from MGM HD from their when they started remastering everything and putting it on demand. But you know, it's kind of the old Screen Factory thing where they take the HD master. But this looks really good.
Did it look appreciably better than the DVD? Since I actually didn't watch my DVD.
Oh yeah,
because I imagine it's probably struck from the same master, I would think. But
you know, the thing is with MGM DVDs, they look really, really good. I remember Prince of Darkness on DVD, like, looks immaculate. Like, it is beautiful. And the same thing with the Burning DVD. They just look really, really. So, but it does look a little bit better. I still had the DVD whenever, because I always like to pop it in just to see the difference, you know. Because, I mean, you always have these people on these forums that are talking about fucking bit rates and, you know, all this, you know, the blacks are a little bit off, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can
see.
So,
Brad,
you're
pixels. One of these people that keep every version of a movie? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I mean, I do until because I'm getting to that point now where I'm getting rid of a lot of my stuff.
Yeah, I was like, what, do you rent a separate house just to like store all that stuff?
No, it's fucking nuts. But yeah, I actually just got rid of my VHS last week of it and the DVD. Wow. So, yeah, because it's not that I'm a hoarder or anything. I would just, you know, I didn't want to get rid of it because it was special to me. You know, I bought the tape myself, you know, when I was little, and, you know, I had it for, you know, 20 years or something, you know, and, you know, I had bought the DVD with my own money. It's just one of those things I never got rid of. But now that they're coming out and, you know, we have all these different companies that are putting out all these different Blu-rays, and you know, by the every Tuesday, you're fucking broke.
It's horrible.
You know, for your average Joe, you know. So,
and then these assholes that do pre-orders on Indiegogo, what are they thinking?
You know, and it gets expensive. So, and that's another reason why Sean and I created this podcast, to talk about physical media, because it is important to us. You know, and I've always been big on physical media, and you want people to tell you the truth, you know, because you do have those fanboys of every company that they can do no wrong. And, you know, we're here to kind of tell you, hey, well, you know, this is exactly what it looks like. I mean, I have the DVD. It looks this different, or, you know, it's, you know, this is a new transfer. It looks, you can see this. I mean, it's more or less constructive criticism rather than these fucking Blu-ray.com people just tearing a film apart.
We keep picking on those guys.
Yeah, well,
there's some good Joes over there.
There is. I think there's a few.
Yeah.
And like with any website, though, it's not necessarily the people contributing to the content. It's more or less the commentators or whatever.
Yeah. No, I guess it's more that where they just want to rag on the film.
Yeah.
But I mean, from the DVD, I think it looks different. It does look better. You know, it's like I said, it's an old HD master, but this is the best the film's ever looked. Could it look better? Yeah, probably. But, you know, definitely for the price point of this Blu-ray, and you're probably not going to get another version of Scarecrows anytime soon.
Yeah, I would think no. I was surprised to have this version.
Yeah, this is definitely worth it, and it's a great package, and it's got reversible artwork of the VHS, which I've always liked better. You know, so yeah,
that was actually one of the rare Scream Factory releases that I didn't feel an immediate compulsion to flip it over. I thought both sides were pretty okay.
Yeah, no, it looks like original. Like, it was that original Laserdisc cover, because it's definitely not the DVD, because the DVD had a black and white cover.
No, MGM did a completely different. Yeah, that's actually the original VHS and Laserdisc cover.
Sweet.
Yep.
No, yeah, well, on the. On the other side, though, because the one where it says Scarecrows in white, that's the VHS I have. The one with the purple letters with the head on the front, because of the original VHS that I have, it's actually the guy. It looks like a man that's being transformed, and he's like on a cross being held up. This one that's on the Blu-ray, though, is just the face kind of like looking down with a purple background.
I don't remember. Maybe that was foreign artwork or something, because I think it's on the disc in one of those posters. There was like a still gallery or something. I seem to recall. Maybe I saw it somewhere else.
Well, the reason why I was asking, I didn't know if it was commissioned for the release or it was pre-existing.
Yeah, I think it was pre-existing, and that's the thing. Okay. A lot of the stuff Scream Factory does, some of their commissions are hit or miss, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Where it's like the first thing you do before you even put the disc in is flip that thing over so I don't have to look at that.
Yeah, the first thing you do is throw away the slipcover because it's that artwork.
Yeah. Well, there's no getting around that.
I get so many people go, you throw them, you what? No, I don't throw them away, actually. I sell them. So if you're interested in slipcovers, let me know.
Oh, on Blu-ray.com probably.
eBay, actually.
Oh, is that right?
I will gladly get rid of those. Because, you know, like – all these movies, you know, I love the VHS art or the original artwork. It's always the best for the most part. Some, you know, some movies, the original artwork wasn't that great, but I still kind of like these movies. A lot of them trigger a nostalgia, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Nostalgia. So you kind of, I love off, even with the Arrow releases, even the Arrow, their commissioned artwork is a lot better than the Scream Factory.
I'm curious, what do these people that buy your slipcovers, what do they do with them?
They put them on because
they got nuts, one that was dinged up or too much or something?
Either that or I think because Scream Factory
they only sell them 3 months after the initial release. So anything you get after that, you know, because, I mean, people can't buy it during that time. Because, I mean, we have so many movies coming out. So they pick them up at a later time. And then when they get them out of the slipcover, they kind of have a bitch fit.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's where I come in.
I actually did not know that. Okay.
I always
pre-order everything, so I don't know.
Sean, was it you that we knew somebody that sold a trick-or-treat, like the trick-or-treat – you know, like the 2012 version of Trick or Treat, the slipcover for like $80.
Oh, Jesus.
Holy
if I would have known I can get that much. Actually, I actually traded a listener of ours. We traded our Trick or Treat Blu-rays because I didn't care about the slipcover and he wanted it.
Yeah, so. I knew someone that sold a Trick or Treat slipcover, just a slipcover, for $80 because apparently it's really rare.
I'm going to have to go dig through my Blu-ray collection. I'll start stripping them of cover because I really don't. I mean, I kind of like I don't care about the slipcover one way or another, to be honest.
Yeah. And well, the thing is, I'm getting rid of my VHS. Stuff,
half the time, it's the artwork I don't like, so it's sort of like, yeah.
If it's something, if it's something really different, like the those recent Severin flicks with the what are they called?
Vampire Lesbos.
Yeah, Vampire Lesbos. Those slipcovers are good. The Grindhouse releasing, how they have it, it's like a thicker box. Like, those are cool. Like, I kind of, I dig those.
Like the Cannibal Holocaust one.
Yeah, Cannibal Holocaust, yeah. Cannibal Furrow. Like, those, you know, those are offering something to the packaging. If it's just the same thing, the same cover or whatever over a Blu-ray case, and, you know, I don't, what it's, it goes and it sits on my shelf. Like,
it's, yeah, slipcovers, and to be honest, I'm not a, truly a big fan of steelbooks either. I know that's blasphemy because there's many people that love them. But
I'm on the fence with the steelbooks.
Because to me, I'm just like, I'm old and I just want to watch the movie.
Well,
the
steelbooks are really, scratched.
Yeah, they, exactly.
Crazy. And you can't replace a steelbook. You can replace a Blu-ray case.
Oh my God, Sean. Can we talk about scarecrows,
Sean? Oh, yeah,
Sean?
Scarecrows. Here we go, scarecrows. You know, one thing I loved, because I started watching the special features. I couldn't get through all of them. I absolutely loved the interview with the interview with Norman Vernon. Cabrera was really good. And then Ted Vernon. Yeah.
Ted Vernon.
He's in this room. It has to be a room in his house. But it's like his hunter room where he has, like, there's all these, like, heads.
That dude's scary.
Heads of deer, or it looks
kind of crazy, too.
And there's if you notice, there's like a double barrel shotgun in the corner, too. If you look carefully, so.
This special feature reminds me of the Slumber Party Massacre special feature with the neighbor where they interview him. And
well,
he's
that
just,
one's odd.
He's but he's absolutely insane. It seems Ted Vernon might be a little crazy.
He's a little crazy, but I loved the interview.
No, it's great. Yeah, it's the candidness
of it. Well, and one of the things we learned from that is that he basically saved that movie. He came in and financed the 11th hour. So yeah. We wouldn't even have a Scarecrow's Blu-ray to talk about if he hadn't done that.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, I love hearing. I mean, he credits all his career to Scarecrows. He says he got a lot of other gigs from that film,
which is funny because I swear I'm sure like 20 people saw that movie originally. You know, it was such a just appeared on a shelf and you know never, because I know I think even publicity wise there may have been like a one page article in Fangoria or Gore Zone at the time, if that.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally just came out of nowhere and with no press of any kind.
Well, it definitely deserves its cult status because, I mean, yeah, you're right. It came from nothing. And, I mean, people say cult status. I think it takes a lot for it to become a cult movie. But, yeah. I mean, with horror fans, this is a title I hear thrown around a little bit. But, yeah, I think it deserves everything it does. And it does deserve to do better because I know that they – you know, Screen Factory just recently said some of their films that haven't done well, and the pre-orders on this were way down. And you know, this is something that they took a chance on.
That's
apparently,
yeah.
Apparently, this was going to be a double with
Destroyer.
Destroyer. Yeah, originally it was supposed to be a double feature, which is a weird double feature.
And then a bunch of bitch fits came out on Facebook, and you know, I want a standalone Blu-ray. I don't want it with that. Okay, well, you know, like JR said, we're here for – like, I could really give a shit. I mean, yeah, everything is a single Blu-ray. That would be great. But if it's doubled up, who gives a fuck?
I'm a fan of
the features. It doesn't harm the movie.
I was sort of incensed when they did Love at First Bite with Once Bitten because I Once Bitten, I'm sorry. That movie sucks.
It's really bad.
It's just so bad. And I saw – Love at First Bite in the theater as a child. So for me, I have, you know, a fondness and an affinity, as stupid as the movie is. So just, I popped it in and I watched Love at First Bite. And then I was like, well, okay, I'm going to watch Once Bitten. And I couldn't make it through it. It's so bad.
Yeah,
but
well,
whatever.
I mean,
I'm glad to have it anyways.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Destroyer?
Well, Screen Factory was recently on Killer
POV, right?
No. Screen Factory was recently on Killer POV, and they were actually discussing some of the issues about their releases and doing stuff like this. Because originally, Scarecrows was prepared with Destroyer. Well, they actually listened to the fans, because a lot of the fans bitched about, you know, it was an odd pairing, number one, and they wanted Scarecrows as a standalone. So they postponed the release of Destroyer, and they're going to pair it with something else that has not been announced yet. So they released Scarecrows by itself, and now they're kind of hitting themselves because it's not doing well. So yeah,
and
that's
the thing. You get these people like on Blu-ray.com and other places that are so vocal that it becomes such a roar that you think, oh my God, companies think, oh, we have to do this and release this by itself. And here it turns out, again, it's like five guys complaining.
Five goddamn mouth breathers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you want to please your fans.
Yeah.
And you want to do the right thing at the end of the day. But, you know, you have to think about it, you know, how if you release Destroyer by itself, which they're smart enough not to.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to sell anything. You know, you want to pair it up with something. So maybe you get two different things, you know, because people have that like Destroyer, they don't like Scarecrows. People like Scarecrows, they don't like Destroyer.
Yeah, you're not going to make
anybody happy.
Or wouldn't
buy Destroyer by itself, you know?
Exactly.
You have to, you know, sometimes you have to pair these films up together in order to make a sale at the end of the day. So they kind of made a statement that if you, you know, guys, if you're going to ask for things like this, we got to move more than 300 copies, you know? So
is that literally all? That's not literally all they sold. You're just throwing the number out.
They stated not on Scarecrows, but they could have been exaggerating, but I think they said that New Year's Evil only sold about 300 copies.
Wow.
Which is insane to me.
Yeah,
that's such a big company like that would only sell 300, but at the same time, I kind of buy it, you know? So.
Or didn't buy it.
Now I got the song from New Year's Evil in my head.
New Year's Evil!
You know what they should put the Destroyer with? I just popped into my head, but I don't know if they have the rights. I don't know who has the rights. The Mutilator.
Arrows, actually.
Is Arrow doing the Mutilator?
Yeah.
Okay, well, as long as somebody's doing it.
Yeah, no, it's you know, that's a film that I see that's requested constantly. And, you know, it's funny
that
it
has
that's
a guilty pleasure.
And that's – you want to talk about a soundtrack. That soundtrack doesn't fit that movie at all. It's like all happy and shit.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But, I can't wait. I mean, it looks like Arrow's kind of getting into the more obscure slashers because they're doing Blood Rage, which comes out next month or
– But now are you talking August. About Arrow UK or Arrow US? Is doing?
Arrow US.
Oh, yeah. Very nice.
So,
okay.
Yeah, Blood Rage, which is also known as Nightmare at whatever. It's the apartment complex that they're at. It's Nightmare at Shadow Woods, I think it's called, which is also, you know, Blood Rage, which is a more popular title. And then they've hinted at the Mutilator a few times. And Jeff Nelson has also said on different occasions on Facebook that Arrow does have the Mutilator. So hopefully we'll see a great
So they've at least tried to get it, I guess.
Yeah, it looks like it. And they've, you know, it's fun because on the podcast recently, I suggest everybody listen to it, is that they kind of do hint at things that they have and things that they cannot get. So, which sucks is they said that recently a bunch of films went to Lionsgate that they were pretty upset about. I forget what company it is, but Lionsgate recently bought up another company.
Hmm.
And they're shelving all those movies.
Wow.
Lionsgate.
Wow.
It's amazing. The more they release, the more people release, the more stuff, you know, resurfaces. There's still so many titles out there.
Hopefully Lionsgate. I mean,
there's so many titles that have never even seen DVD release.
Yeah, there's so many.
Like Robot Ninja, you know?
Oh, Jesus. Like Robot Ninja. A virtual slap in the face there. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, it's one thing that I'm going through now recently is, you know, I'm starting to get rid of my DVDs and VHS because I'm getting rid of all my tapes that are on DVD or Blu-ray. And,
well, that's why I was teasing you about it earlier, because I'm a replacement guy. Once I get a better replacement, that old one is out of here because I just don't have the space. And
yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. I've recently got, I think, rid of like 700 tapes. I mean, I still have like, 2,000 more. But, you know, I'm only keeping things that are VHS only. And it's really funny because, you know, you think about all these companies that are releasing all these movies, but people really have no idea how many movies are really out there. Like, they really don't, you know.
No, I'm just going with each new format, we lose X number of movies that never, you know, make that trek to the, you know, to the new format.
Yeah, no, it sucks too, because I mean, you know, you always hear about how films are lost and, you know, negatives, and even prints are no longer in existence. You know, the negative's long gone, the prints are all gone, you know, so we don't have anything rather than maybe a bootleg VHS. So, yeah, it sucks, man. Movies are dying, but people, you know, they don't realize it. That's why I'm hoping that, you know, more companies like Screen Factory, they come around, but they start releasing things that are kind of disappearing. And saving films, piece by, you know, film by film.
Yeah, it's gotten
harder with the streaming and the piracy, especially because nowadays the literally the day after something, the street date of a particular release, it's up on all these sites where anybody can download it for free.
Oh, yeah, and even before that, since the screeners go out, the people are uploading the screeners that they obtain. So,
people always ask me, oh, you know, I saw Dead Next Door or whatever here and there. Can't you get them to take it down? It's like, well, if Universal Studios and Paramount and all these other, they can't do it, what hope do you think I have?
Yeah.
You know, of getting these pirate sites to pull the stuff. It's nearly impossible.
Yeah. Yep. It sucks.
There's my piracy rant. Sorry.
Well, I've ranted about piracy as well. So
yeah. Buy your shit, people. Buy your own shit.
Buy scarecrows. Which is anybody else feel this is kind of like a demons. Like a, you know, a kind of lost, almost in a way, like a young Carpenter movie. Just how everybody's kind of like dressed in black.
I could see that.
And,
yeah, totally.
And kind of sweaty, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, maybe Assault on Precinct 13, but with a horror film instead. I don't know. I always kind of thought that, you know, like how people are dressed. You know, it's like Escape from, you know, New York, Assault on Precinct 13, mixture of even characters, you know, because it has that characterization where you kind of like the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, and you look like the good guys, and you have the turn event of the good guys being the bad guys and bad guys being the good guys.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So I always kind of got that vibe. And I think that's another reason why I was always so partial to this film is because it, you know, it felt like a Hollywood movie at times. Not saying that's a good thing, but it, you know, it more or less on the sense that it's polished.
Scarecrow's remake. There should be a Scarecrow remake.
There you go.
This is one movie that actually I think would a remake would be cool, you know.
Yeah, because
we have so many Scarecrow's movies, though. Yeah, we get to realize what's going on, or maybe just a sequel.
have either of you listened to the William Wesley's commentary track? Because I haven't had a chance yet, and I'm dying because I really want to like hear all the whole story about how this movie was made.
Well, now that I know he's alive, I can't wait to listen to it.
Yeah, see,
it's from beyond the grave. You know, one thing I thought was kind of funny is that, you know, the amount of Scarecrow movies that are actually in existence. Like, there is this kind of, you know,
it's a subgenre.
It's, you know, almost like Nazi zombies in a way where they pop up every once in a while. I mean, we have Night of the Scarecrow. That was – what year was Night of the Scarecrow?
That's the Jeff Burr one you're talking about?
95?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Jeff Burr.
It was Night of the Scarecrow, then there's Dark Knight.
Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Yeah, Dark Knight of the Scarecrow's with Larry Drake.
Yes.
Yeah, that was in the 80s. But
even Disney has a Scarecrow movie. Does anybody remember what it is?
Ooh.
Dr. Sin the Scarecrow, S-Y-N?
No, I don't remember that.
No? That's from my childhood, so. Well, there you go. You got something to watch.
I'm looking this up right now.
Go to a pirate site.
Oh, damn it.
Well, we also have those you remember those movies I think it were in early 2000s. The first one came out just called Scarecrow. And then they had like a spin-off like Scarecrow Spring Break and shit.
Yeah, I was going to say there's one that there's like a whole series of them or something that I sort of completely missed.
Yeah, really really weird. I think like Tiffany Shepis is in it. I mean, she's in everything, but like Tiffany Shepis is in it. It's just really bizarre, like this on and on and on again of these Scarecrow movies that came out in the early 2000s. And, you know, it's funny because I was looking up, you know, who did this. And Asylum was actually behind them. which is hilarious because they do all the knockoffs now.
Yeah, but... I was going to say, what were they ripping off when they did those? We don't know.
Scarecrows, apparently.
By the way, gentlemen, you can get Dr. Sin, the Scarecrow of Romney Marsh, for only $389.95 through Amazon.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Well, I wonder if it's on iTunes. Disney has that Disney Movies Anywhere
Disney's
now.
They're starting to dig into their catalog.
Yeah, there's a lot of old stuff that I grew up on that nobody else seems to have ever heard of, like that one that I would love to have on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, whatever happened to Jeff Burr?
Jeffrey Burr?
Eddie Presley. Well, he did.
Tempe DVD. No.
Well, he did Pumpkinhead 2, right?
Well, that was a long time ago. That was actually, I think, before Night of the Scarecrow.
Yeah. And then he did one of the. Did he do the third Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie?
Yeah, Leatherface Chainsaw 3.
Yeah. What else did he do? Now I'm like hooked on Jeff Burr. Well,
Eddie
we did the other
Eddie Presley distributed by Tempe DVD. I told you I'm in full on pimp mode here. No, but that's actually if nobody's seen that movie, it's very depressing. But it's actually one of Jeff's best movies. It's his most personal movie for sure.
Well, they actually just released From Whisper to a Scream on Scream Factory, and that
right,
was another
which is his first movie.
Jeff
yeah.
Burr. Yeah, so I gotta look.
He's actually he's a film teacher in his old hometown or home state of Georgia.
Nice.
Oh,
he teaches
sweet.
Film now. Right. I mean, he still dabbles in stuff. He's not completely done yet. So,
oh, he's from Ohio too, right?
No, he's from Georgia.
He's from Georgia. Oh, okay.
Yep. He's a Southern boy.
And I think he did some of the Puppet Master films too.
He did Puppet Master 4 and 5.
Sweet.
And a number of kids movies during my tenure at Full Moon. He was doing some kids movies through them.
Nice.
Because he did one with Andrew Prine, who would later. Star in Witch House 2 for me. So there was some overlap there. We were sharing actors.
Awesome. Well, gentlemen, should we start wrapping it up here? Do we have any final thoughts on Scarecrows?
Love it. Buy it.
All right.
Yeah, definitely a cheap one and, you know, a hell of a movie.
Yeah, a lot of fun. You know? A lot of fun. Some great gore. I mean, the gore effects are just oozy and slimy and
need
disgusting.
To hint. This is the uncut Scarecrow's Blu-ray that Scream Factory released is the uncut version because it has the extra gore.
Yes.
So just to you know, for all the people that want to know, that's all in there because the DVD is uncut and it matches up identical.
So. Awesome.
It's like 4 minutes difference, I think, something like that, or 3 minutes.
And if you took that out and all just the stills of the Scarecrow sitting there, you'd probably have an hour movie.
Probably.
I'm sure they were trying to pad it to a,
It's a short movie. It's 83 minutes. I mean, it's...
Yeah, because I think it was back in the day, HBO or one of the cable companies had a minimum of, I think it had to be 72 or 80 minutes or something like that. I'm sure they were padding it, you know, to try and make a cable deal.
Yeah. All right. Very cool. Yeah, I suggest it. I'm glad to own this add this to my collection for sure. So everyone go out and support the Dead Next Door Indiegogo. We got 9 days left as of this recording. So get over to Indiegogo, Google.
It's like a time. It's like a timer on a bomb.
Yeah.
It's ticking down. Seconds remain.
Google Dead Next Door and Indiegogo or go to Indiegogo.com and type in Dead Next Door. You'll find it.
Now, one other question with that you are printing up 1,000 no matter what of this, or is it just the people that will get, like, how is that working? I know that originally you said 1,000 will be printed, right? Or
well,
you
I
print
left
that many
open.
If you don't
I worded it carefully so that only 1,000 would be offered with,
oh,
the,
I got
you know, that way if somebody bought, you know, the 999th copy, I could justify maybe making more. And that could still happen. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people out there that maybe don't know what Indiegogo is or don't like the whole crowdfunding thing or, or just cheap bastards. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, we may not hit anywhere close to that goal, in which case I'll, you know, be selling them on the street corner.
Well, boxes filling up your living room.
Exactly.
And what's going on with the 88 Films release? Do you, are you talking to them about it at all, or is that if you signed?
Well, that's kind of what started this whole thing. Is Calum Waddle approached me about licensing it for them, and I think at the time had I even started on the film scan? I think I did. I think I had the film, or at least part of the film scanned, and he heard about it somewhere or something. Mm-hmm. So we did that deal last fall or late summer or fall. Okay. So they've been very patient and waiting because they wanted it like in January and now it's June and it's still not done. So
has anything changed?
I got to give a shout
leaving?
Out to those guys. What's that?
Has anything changed with it, you think, with him leaving?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, they haven't notified me, you know, that it's that it's off the schedule or anything. But I think they just they've been having a lot of scheduling issues. They keep running into a lot of delays for different reasons. Mm-hmm. But every time I see somebody mention Dead Next Door being delayed, I am trying to jump in there and say, it's not them, it's me. Don't blame them.
Yeah.
This one's on me. But they've been patient. They said they'll release it when it's ready. So they're not, you know, I think at this point I would have ideally preferred to have both versions available at the same time. And it looks like that's probably what's going to happen.
Okay. I mean, they have a lot. They have a lot on their schedule as it is. So I don't think they're hurting for anything to sell. Yeah. I mean,
they've kind of toned down with the announcements too, because they announced a lot.
They're going crazy.
That Italian line,
And
then their is it Anthropomorphicus Vegas?
Wow.
How do you pronounce that?
See, now you're saying it to me.
I know how to say it, but I'm going to screw it up.
I don't think I've ever been able to pronounce that. We used to just call it the Grim Reaper because that's what it was.
Yeah.
So the guy's eating his own guts. That's all I know. I recognize is the cover. That's the only thing I've ever recognized on that film. But cool. They got enough. They got enough on their plate. So
yeah, I think they're fine with it whenever they get it. Hopefully. Cool. So
all right.
Well, that's limited too, by the way. So.
Yep, I got mine pre-ordered. Done.
So
all right. Just to elaborate. On, since we're talking about 88 Films before we go, is you can order their disc on Amazon.com, and it's an import. That is not the disc that I'm offering, just to clarify.
Ooh. Yeah, order it through Amazon UK?
No, it's on Amazon.com as an import.
Oh.
The 88 Films. I mean, this the Ultimate Edition that
I'm putting
together will be available at some point that way.
Right, but the one that only available on Amazon is.
But if you go to Amazon.com and are looking to buy a Blu-ray today, that's going to be the import, and it may not play on your player because it'll be region locked.
Probably region.
Fair warning.
Gotcha. You want the Indiegogo? You want this one anyway? This one's freaking packed. So
yeah,
do the right thing, everybody.
Exactly.
All right. And with that, guys, I guess everyone head over to thescreamcast.com and buy some shit. As if you're spending some money, I need to go on Dead Next Door and grab a mug. To Screamcast.com.
Buy Scarecrow first.
You have to.
You know, buy Dead Next Door, then Scarecrows, then Demons.
And then the mug. And then a mug from Screamcast.com.
We're live.
You know, anybody else would have put the mug first, so I got to give you guys credit.
This podcast.
Sean did put the mug first.
I did. I tried. You know, that's the thing, I think, with this podcast, is we're about the movies. You know, any little bit helps with supporting the show and getting us out there. But really, you know, buy the movies. Spend your money on movies. And, you know, we'll be here. We're spending money on these movies, too. Believe me, my wife lets me know every month how much.
I don't see Synapse and Scream Factory aren't throwing me any comps to come on here and talk about their discs. I'm happy to do it.
Yep.
Yeah, man. Happy to have you, always.
We'll have you again
when Robot Ninja, right?
Yeah, well, hopefully if it happens before I die. You may be talking to my son. You guys may be old.
I have to admit that I keep seeing your son's artwork that pops up, even though he hasn't seen the movie. You keep posting on your Facebook page, and I think that is fucking hilarious.
I think people probably think that I'm actually, like, forcing him at gunpoint. You know? I swear to God, he is like the number one fan of a movie he's never seen.
Awesome.
And I think it's beautiful.
No, every day it's something new, and he'll come to me with these great sketches, and I'm to the point where he talks about this movie so much that I'm sick of it. I'm like, this is my own movie and I can't stand to listen to it anymore, but God bless him.
That's great.
Have you thought about putting like a gallery on the Blu-ray of your son's artwork?
Well, there's so much of it at this point. There's some I still haven't posted, but
it could be the reversible cover.
Yeah. No, that's what somebody
or a slipcase. Yeah.
Well, because he got an advanced peek at the new artwork. And I think the end of last week or something that we're working on, which I'm going to announce here in a few days, but cool. He did his own version of it, which, of course, doesn't really look like what the final artwork will be. But it's a very good interpretation of it for a six-year-old.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's awesome. Great.
All right. Let's see. JR, thank you so much for hanging out with us.
No, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
I'm going to run through the obligatory plugs, and we'll be out of here. Go to Coffee Shop of Horrors. And if you buy coffee there, use the coupon code SCREAMCAST. You get 10% off. And then, of course, our show's available over at oneofus.net. Listen to us, and there are other shows there as well. And also, for the UK, nerdly.co.uk gives us a ton of love, so I want to thank them. And Wolfmen of Mars, their album is out now, so grab it. It's on Bandcamp, and I believe it's getting an iTunes release. I believe it's out on iTunes this week, and they are going to be announcing a vinyl version very soon. So... of course, they're the ones who provided the music for the show, so we want to give them a quick plug. And with that, all of you guys have...
I didn't do my plug.
Oh, shit! You got the Grindhouse video.
Yeah, so we mentioned last podcast that...
Actually, you know what? This is technically the first time you're talking about Grindhouse video. Technically.
No, because we mentioned Grindhouse on the last podcast...
Did we?
Not the one we recorded with Bill Lustig.
See, when we record stuff out of order, I get all
No, I'm
confused.
Saying we announced, we said something's going on
yes.
with Grindhouse Video in the Arrow episode.
Proceed.
Proceed. I promoted it on the Bill Lustig episode, but I promoted it in such a way that I've already done this one. So, huh? All right, so last podcast we mentioned that we were working with GrindhouseVideo.com in order to create some kind of partnership. Well, that happened. We are now partnered with GrindhouseVideo.com. You can put in the coupon code SCREAMCAST10 for 10% off your orders. You can order online. I suggest you do. Support the little guy. Fuck Amazon. You know, for maybe a dollar or two more, you can help out a company that will, you know, compete against Diabolic. So we'll see.
The prices are good.
Yeah. Prices are good.
Yep.
And 10% off, so go support them. And also, I just wanted to make a little bit of shout. I don't think this is another campaign. We will talk about this at a later time. But our buddy John Portanova, his company, the October People, are promoting a new film. They did a Kickstarter for it. It goes live. I'm not exactly sure. We'll have more, but it's called – I believe the film's called Ayla. But they will be promoting it. Tristan Risk is in it, which we love, who's been on the podcast before. Bill Oberst Jr. and a couple other other recognizable faces. So we'll see that coming. So just a heads up, keep that out there. Keep that in mind, because we always like to support indie film.
Awesome. So. And next week, BJ will be back. We are talking to William Lustig as we – in a weird way,
it is a fucking
great. Oh my
great.
God. I can't
he
wait.
He is so badass.
I can't wait for all of you to hear it. So that's a plug for next week's show. It's fantastic. And we had nothing to do with it. We just talked to the friggin' William Lustig, and he's great. Anyway, with that, all of you guys have a great week. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Your byes are always the
worst.
They're the worst.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
My family does their own thing.
Well, you don't have you don't have little kids.
I have two dogs. I had the worst stomach cramps that night. I recorded that whole podcast on the toilet. Like, I was sitting in the office, and I was like, uh-oh. And so I just unplugged everything and just got on my phone and just sat there. I didn't even get up. Like, I literally sat on the toilet for, like, an hour.